Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
North Korea's Kim Jong-un will appear at a military parade in Beijing next week alongside the Chinese President Xi Jinping and also the Russian President Vladimir Putin in what's being billed as a landmark meeting between the three leaders. The parade will mark the 80th anniversary of Japan's surrender in World War II and the end of the conflict. Well, for his analysis, I'm joined by Robert E. Kelly, who's Professor of Political Science at Pusan National University. Good morning to you, Robert, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So tell me, what is, in your view, Xi Jinping trying to achieve by inviting both the leader of North Korea and Russia to China at the same time?
Sure. So the defeat over the Japanese is a big moment in the Chinese communist calendar. So every year they have the big parade. And of course, this is the 80th anniversary, so they're going to sort of amp it up even more. And in the last few years, since really the beginning of the Ukraine war, China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran have sort of grown tighter, right? There's a big debate out there in the national security community about whether or not this is like some kind of new axis, or is it an alliance, or is it just like a gang or something like that. But they are undoubtedly coordinating more. There's a fairly consistent effort by all three, for example, to support Russia's victory in Ukraine. And presumably they would support China in a conflict over Taiwan. And so this is seen, I think, especially in the West, this is seen as like a symbol of that, right? That the three of them are going to be on the stage at the same time. And it's really rare, particularly for the North Korean leader, to journey out of the country.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't travel very much, does he?
No. I mean, when you run an autocracy, you got to be really careful, right? Because when you're not home, you might get stabbed in the back. You might have a general run in there and overthrow the state. So traditionally, North Korean leadership, I mean, North Korea is like really extreme autocracy, right? They traditionally don't leave the country. I believe this is only the second time that Kim has done this, third maybe.
Right, so it's extraordinary, really, for him to accept this invitation and to be there. Because we have seen Donald Trump dealing with the European Union in a very different way to the way we have seen other presidents, Is there some attempt here by the Chinese to try and create a new world order? You know, there's some disruption underway. Let's capitalize on it.
Yeah, I mean, Trump has created a lot of wedges in the traditional Western sort of order, the liberal international order, if you will. And it's pretty clear that the Chinese in the last 10 years or so feel that like their moment is coming, that the Americans are in decline, that the United States is decadent. I mean, this is something that, you know, like I hear from Chinese scholars at conferences out here in East Asia all the time. And so, you know, this is their moment. And Trump has only really accelerated that, right? I mean, Trump is doing a lot of damage to American power. Way he's picking fights with NATO and stuff like that. You know, it's going to be very difficult for Trump to rally an alliance against China, for example, over Taiwan at the same time that Trump is slapping tariffs on U.S. allies and yelling at him and stuff like that on television. So, this is kind of China's moment, right? And again, I think the Chinese kind of feel that. I think they kind of sense that, like, the wind is at their back. And, you know, I think you're going to get an enormous amount of media coverage of this event in the next 2 weeks.
And are the Chinese concerned that Vladimir Putin had that meeting with Donald Trump, that they feel maybe that relationship is improving and they would rather the Russians stay on their side?
Yeah, so that actually gets to a sort of an interesting discussion about just how much of like an alliance this is, or is it more like a gang? I would argue that's kind of more like a gang, kind of like the Axis back in the 1940s in World War II. They didn't really coordinate very well, you know, kind of Hitler ran off and did his own thing. And I think in this sort of group, you have the same kind of thing, right? I think the Chinese are really uncomfortable with the idea. The Russians are really uncomfortable with the idea that China would run the show of their sort of alliance. But, you know, in terms of weight, that will be the case, right? The Chinese economy is now much, much larger than the Russian economy. And so I think that's one of the reasons why the Russians are reaching out to the North Koreans, and they're getting along really well. It gives them both a way to sort of escape domination by the Chinese. So there are splits among these, right, among these countries. And, you know, if Donald Trump was a little more, I don't know, sort of aware and on his feet and cared about these issues, there'd be room for the United States to kind of work those wedges too. But, you know, but Trump was kind of checked out. And so I think in the next week or so, you're going to see a lot of discussion about whether or not they're like a block and are they challenging the United States as a group.
Well, he is. Donald Trump is talking, isn't he, about visiting Asia in the coming weeks. He spent a very long time in that press conference with the South Korean leader in the Oval Office this week saying, oh, yeah, I'm, you know, I'll be heading over there. I mean, would you expect such a visit to happen? and what might be on the agenda in terms of meetings and discussions?
So if Trump swings through and he hits the democracies in the region, my guess is that the response would be pretty cool, right? I mean, the U.S. has allies out here, South Korea and Taiwan and the rest, and Thailand and Japan. So Trump could sort of shop through those. But I mean, he's created a fair amount of bad will with the way he talks about U.S. allies and the tariffs and stuff like that. The tariffs really hit hard with U.S. allies in Asia because they all export to the U.S. On the other hand, I think what Trump really wants to do is, Trump doesn't really like democracies very much. What he really wants to do is meet Kim Jong-un. He wants to meet the dictator of North Korea, right? He said that when the South Korean president was in the Oval Office. Trump did that when he was president the first time, you know, and that got him an enormous amount of attention. The media was talking about Trump for like, you know, a week. And I mean, Trump really, really thrives on media attention. The real issue is that if Trump actually meets the North Koreans again, is it just going to be what it was last time, which was just this kind of circus atmosphere that didn't actually really result in any meaningful strategic changes? You know, I would be surprised if the North Koreans want to meet Trump to just go through the motions like last time. And there's got to be something really concrete. And, you know, Trump hasn't worked up any meaningful proposals that anyone has seen.
Mm-hmm. Then again, coming back to this meeting that we're going to have, the military parade in mm-hmm. Beijing, do you expect mm-hmm. that, Robert, to be a photo opportunity, a show of strength, or will there be a lot of business happening in the background?
I would imagine there'd be a fair amount of business going in the background. I think the photo opportunity is a good way to put it, right? I mean, we're going to see, there's going to be just saturation coverage of this, right, for the next couple of weeks. And we're going to all see the pictures of them all standing together and holding hands and cheering. And, you know, the Chinese troops will march by and it'll look very terrifying and fascistic and the rest of it. And that's all meant to intimidate us in the West. But I would imagine behind the scenes, there's probably going to be a lot of debate about whether or not, and how, if so, how these countries can coordinate and cooperate, right? Because if Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran can actually function together as something like a block, if they can actually really sort of organize and integrate and generate some kind of like joint force, it's actually a really powerful block, right? I mean, this is kind of like what the communists tried to do back during the Cold War, but that didn't really work because the Chinese and the Soviets were always in competition. And I think that's kind of, you know, if you're China particularly, this is kind of what you want to do. You want to kind of get the Russians and North Koreans and others on board and kind of follow you in this challenge to the American order that the Chinese keep talking about, right? But I think that's going to be pretty tough. You know, I don't know if the Russians want to sign up for that. You know, they're kind of, you know, a little wary about being sort of dominated by China. So, I mean, if I were Xi Jinping, that's what I'd be doing. I would be working hard behind the scenes to try to line these countries up and say, like, we're working together. Let's go, you know, change how the system works.
But it is likely, isn't it, that all of the attention focused on these three guys at this big military parade is going to irk Donald Trump?
Yeah, to the extent that Donald, yeah, that's a good way to put it.
The attention they're going to get, as you say.
Exactly, yeah.
That's what he hates most, isn't it, when somebody else is getting more attention than he is.
Right, and you really saw that in Alaska, where the whole thing was basically just to keep Donald Trump on television for a week and get us to stop talking about Epstein. I mean, nothing came out of the Alaska meeting with Putin, right? I mean, it was thrown together at the last minute. You know, this Trump is clapping on the red carpet and stuff. I mean, just it was all just kind of slapdash and sloppy, and that's why nothing came of it. And that's very similar to the way when Donald Trump met Kim Jong-un 8 years ago. It was all kind of thrown together at the last minute, but the media coverage was at saturation levels. And yeah, I would imagine that that's going to upset Donald Trump.
And tell me, you mentioned there that North Korea mightn't want a meeting with Donald Trump if it's not going to have anything of substance on the agenda. What is it that they would want from the Americans in North Korea?
Sure. So the big thing they want is the same thing they wanted 7-8 years ago when we went through this last time, which is a rollback of the sanctions, some kind of reintegration of North Korea into the world economy. Particularly what the North Koreans really want is access to banking outside of the few sort of low-level banks in China and Russia that will run the risk of the sanctions. That's what they really want, to reconnect to the global financial system. And to do that, they got to get the Americans on board. Now, Donald Trump doesn't support the sanctions regime the way traditional American presidents has. He's much more friendly to autocrats than a traditional American president. So my guess is that Trump would actually be willing to give away the sanctions regime for some kind of like smaller counter concession. But the North Koreans have really got to give us something. And the something means like not just, you know, like humanitarian concessions and family reunions. But the North Koreans have really got to give us something strategic. They got to like pull their forces back from the demilitarized zone. They've got to give us like a nuclear weapon so we have some sense of what they've managed to build in the last 20 years. You know, and this is what the North Koreans danced around 6 or 7 years ago. They just didn't want to make meaningful concessions on the stuff we really care about, missiles and nuclear weapons. And so, you know, nothing really came of it. But that's why they got to do the work beforehand, right? Trump shouldn't do what he did in Alaska, which is just get on the plane and like fly in there and like clap on TV, right? You got to do the staff work. And, you know, Trump is really bad at that.
He has a son in Hong Kong. Eric is in Hong Kong, I see, just on the wires this morning. Yes.
Okay,
so he is, you won't be surprised to hear this, but Eric Trump is urging people to buy Bitcoin. His own crypto company is seeking acquisitions in Hong Kong, and he is praising the cryptocurrency community for supporting his father during the election and saying that it is the greatest asset that people will have ever seen, saying that China is a hell of a power in the sector and encouraging people to buy. But you won't be surprised to hear all of that, I'm sure.
No, I would not. It's a grift-a-thon with the Trump people back in the White House. It's really embarrassing, actually.
Well, he's attending a shareholder meeting in this Japanese Bitcoin treasury company called Meta Planet. They are involved in a number of crypto endeavors. So it's no surprise to hear that he's encouraging people to buy. Robert, it's great to talk to you as always. Thank you for your time this morning. Robert E. Kelly, who's Professor of Political Science. Now, coming up next, we're going to be talking about The Traitors, which of course is coming to our screens here on RTE this weekend. But we're going to hear from a workplace psychologist about whether the skills needed to progress on the show come naturally to the Irish.
51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.